Good morning, America. Welcome to Legal Anatomy of Current Events. I'm Gary Bell, along with Brad Pollack. We're here to give you the legal breakdown and the legal analysis of current events in our country. And today, we're talking about $83.3 million judgment against Don Trump by Jean Carroll. And today, we're talking about that in the news. What about that? What's the legal analysis of that? How does she collect the money? Can she collect the money, right? Can she do it? And that's what we're here to analyze for you, because on Legal Anatomy of Current Events, it's a nonpartisan show, a non-biased show. We give you the legal analysis so that you can make up your mind on the facts and the stories in our country. So here we go.
Legal Anatomy of Current Events, preparing for launch. Legal Anatomy of Current Events, launch sequence started. T-minus 10, internal power green to go. LES ready for ignition. T-minus 9, 8, 7, we have ignition. 5, 4, commit for launch green. 3, 2, 1, we have liftoff. Legal Anatomy of Current Events, all for you. Now, on the air.
All right, today we're talking about Don Trump and Jean Carroll, and there was an $83.3 million judgment entered. But before that one was entered, there was a previous one for $5 million. And so we're going to analyze this for you. We're going to analyze the appeal for you. We're going to give you the ins and outs, the legal analysis. Can she collect the money? How does she collect the money? Is she entitled to the money now, later? What's that all about? So we're going to cover that as well. But the cases is kind of confusing, so we're going to unconfuse it for you today, right? The first case, technically and legally, was called Jean Carroll number 2. And then the second case was called Jean Carroll number 1. So we're going to get rid of that, but we want you to know we understand the difference. So we're just going to talk about the first Jean Carroll Don Trump case, and we're going to talk about the second Jean Carroll Don Trump case. So first case, second case. First case was the $5 million verdict by the jury. That's where they found Don Trump guilty of what some people have called rape, but abuse, sexual assault, and defamation, and awarded $5 million. And then we're going to be talking about the second Jean Carroll case, and that was $83.3 million. So, Brad, let's set this up. How in the world, you study in law school, you can't usually have two different cases. How in the world do we get two different cases here? Because most legal scholars would say, hey, you guys, hey, If everything that was in the first case and second case should have just been brought together all at once, they should have been just done all at once and not two separate trials, not two separate cases. And there's all kinds of legal beagle doctrines called res judicata and collateral estoppel. But let's explain it to everybody in English language today.
Well, I don't know if I can explain it enough in the English language as far as what's going on in this mess of a case and what's going on with it. The jury awarded Jean Carroll $83.3 million and the second defamation trial.
Right, second trial.
Be careful, you have to listen. It was based on a defamation trial. It was based on punitive damages.
The second case.
You can't get to punitive damages until you at least get a first case, or maybe you get a first verdict, and the jury can then go to determining the damages. Maybe sometimes in the same deliberations, but they can't go there until you get the punitive damages decision. But punitive damages doesn't have anything to do with, well, it could be a linchpin, but punitive damages doesn't have anything to do with compensatory damages. And compensatory damages, and to pay for the losses that she experienced from the defamation and from the sexual assault.
Right. Well, you know, the second Jean Carroll trial was dealing with defamation that Don Trump was accused of doing, obviously, in 2019. The first trial dealt with the defamation in 2022. And he said things like, I've never known this woman, she's a sicko, she's bringing this, it's all made up, it's all trumped up, so to speak. And so that was what it was all about. But so the first verdict, Brad, came in at $5 million. Let's just break that one down, and then we'll get to the $83.3 million. So you got a verdict of $5 million way back when in the first trial. Let's go, how does she collect this? I mean, so the judge enters a judgment, and you got to have a final judgment under Rules 59 and 60. That's a bunch of legal talk. But you have to have a final judgment. And then what can Jean Carroll and her attorneys do to go collect the money? Because I don't think he's going to pay it voluntarily.
Well, you know, okay, so let's stop there. We get the first verdict of $5 million, and the judge has to enter judgment on that verdict. And that's after you get all the post-trial motions that get filed with respect to a verdict like that. Well, it's with respect to any verdict. You get post-trial motions. You know, the defendant asked for a new trial. The defendant says they were prejudiced in this form or in that form, or that something went wrong here or went wrong there, or the jury didn't. They asked for a judgment notwithstanding the jury verdict, and they asked that it be overturned. And they go through a number of procedural reasons why they should be able to. They should not have to pay the first judgment or the first verdict.
Well, let's talk about that a second, Brad. So when the first verdict comes in, $5 million, the judge enters judgment. So judgment just doesn't have them automatically. The judge has to enter judgment. Then a bunch of motions, and all the motions say what? And the Trump motions say what? They say you need to get rid of the verdict. The jury was mistaken. You need to dismiss the claim. You need to dismiss the case, notwithstanding the verdict. But you need to enter an order that the verdict is null and void. Get rid of it. And in English language, that's what they're trying to do.
Actually, they're saying the jury got it wrong, and the judge should overrule the jury, because even though the jury made the decision and everybody wanted a jury, or at least somebody was able to get a jury, they say the jury got it wrong. Or they say, judge, you made some mistakes in evidence you either allowed in, or you made some mistakes in evidence you didn't allow us to put in that is so blatant and so obvious that you should now reverse the verdict. And you should make it a zero verdict on liability. It become a zero verdict, or maybe you should reduce the verdict, which, you know, back when it was $5 million, maybe Trump should have jumped on that when he had the chance.
Maybe so, but let's say we got the $5 million and they don't win any of their motions to set it aside. They don't win any of their motions to get rid of it. It's called motion for NOV, directed verdict, motion for judgment notwithstanding the verdict. That's what those things mean. So let's say they don't win any, Trump doesn't win any of those motions. Now you still got $5 million, Brad. He wants to appeal it. And he wants to stop Jean Carroll at that point from collecting the $5 million while he's on appeal. Let's talk to everybody about that and explain what that means.
Well, you know, and that's another one where you just have to think about it. And you can think about it in a lot of different aspects of why the law is the way it is. But the bottom line is the judge has entered a judgment on the verdict. But technically, if you get right down to it and you say with the obvious stuff, that's not a final judgment.
No.
They can say it may be the final judgment, but even if it's a final judgment, it's only a final judgment for the number of days it takes to go from judgment to filing a notice of appeal. Because once the notice of appeal gets filed, it becomes no longer a final judgment. So, and it, obviously, if you wait too long and you get the notice of appeal filed beyond the time period that you're entitled to ask for a new trial or a notice of appeal, then it's going to become a final judgment, or it will be a final judgment. It technically is a final judgment, but it's subject to being appealed. Once it gets appealed, it's no longer a final judgment.
Right, so they're going to go up on appeal. But, Brad, the judgment means it's a judgment, she can collect it. But when they file the appeal, they have to post a bond, okay? Because people are wondering, why can't Jean Carroll collect the $5 million? We're going to get to the $83.3 million in a minute. Why can't she collect the $5 million? Because Don Trump is appealing it, he posts a bond. Tell everybody about a bond, because when you do a bond and you lose the appeal, it becomes kind of liquidated.
Well, and that's another thing. They don't really have to post a bond. They could say we're just going to appeal, and they could say, Jean Carroll, go see if you can collect any money from
exactly.
Me. You know, go out and try and get it. The purpose of the bond is to stop her from going out and collecting the judgment. Now, why would you want to do that? Well, number one, let's say you're correct. Let's say you should win on your appeal. And let's say in the interim, Jean Carroll goes out and collects 43 of the 83 million, or let's say she collects all 83 million. You want to go back to her and say, okay, the court just granted our appeal, and that means we get a new trial. And by the way, you need to return the 83 million. And what do you do when she looks and says, I spent it?
Right.
Or what do you do when she says, I locked it up the same way you locked up your assets? You know, I just happened to be able to get to your assets, but I locked it up and you didn't, and you don't get it, because that's the way I was able to do it. I locked it up the way Alex Jones allegedly locked up his assets, to make sure that the entity getting the judgment or entitled to the money, in this case it'd be Trump being entitled to get it back, says, well, you know, you don't have the money anymore. And she says, no, I went off to all sorts of vacations and trips, and I spent money on this, and I spent money on this, and I bought my child a yacht, and I spent all the money, and it's gone. Well, now you can't get it back. So as the person against who the judgment's been rendered,
Don Trump,
he wants to make sure that she's not getting those assets and that money until such time as there is a final judgment. And now that's got to be determined on appeal as to see whether there's an appellate reason to send the case back for
retrial. Yeah, but Brad, the question is, how does he do it? He wants to make the appeal, and he doesn't want her to start collection proceedings, which we're going to cover in a minute. How can she do that? He doesn't want her to be able to do that, so he has to post a bond. Once he posts the bond, she can engage in collection efforts. She has to live out the appeal. But if he loses the appeal, what's the effect of the bond? That's what I want to get to.
Well, you know, that's where you got to talk about the bond being a bondsman or a bondsperson or a bonds entity that decides they're going to give the bond. Now, what are they saying? They're saying, we're willing to put up the $83 million so that it's there. And this is why a lot of times as a plaintiff's attorney, you want an appeal and you want the bond. Because now you don't have to go chase down seeing what Mar-a-Lago's worth.
You don't have to engage in collection efforts and go through corporate structure.
Yeah.
You just have the bond.
You don't have to
collect on. If you win the appeal, you got the bond.
You don't have to see who the registered owner is or who the named owner is, and you don't have to try and undo it saying that was a transfer and fraud of creditors. Me being the creditor instead, you just want and you get and you have the bond put together very nicely, and it's an outside entity, a third party, not associated with Trump, not part of Trump's group, not part of Trump's holdings, not any of that, because they have to put up a bond. They're putting up a statement saying, if the judgment comes back supporting Jean Carroll, we will give you the $83 million.
Or the $5 million.
Or the $5
million. The rules apply to either the $5 million or the $83.3 million.
And we will then have the responsibility to get that from Trump. Because what they're saying is we want to get it from Trump, but you'll have the responsibility. Now, in return for doing that, what the bondsman does is the bondsman goes out and says, show me your assets, show me the collateral, give me a percentage of the bond that I'm going to keep for my time and for my effort and for my risk. Show me all the other assets and show me that if it comes back and I have to pay Jean Carroll $83 million, that you, Mr. Trump, are going to give me my $83 million back, and I'm going to get to keep the money I'm charging you right now up front.
Yeah, but let's give an example. So either the $5 million or the $83 million, they post a bond because they want to appeal. That makes it easier to collect on the money if Jean Carroll wins the appeal. It's easier to collect, so she just goes against the bond. But the bondsman, you're talking about, Brad. So if you're the bondsman, you're going to guarantee $83.3 million. You're going to take some collateral. You might take Mar-a-Lago, a pledge to me. I'm the bondsman. You give it to me. You give me the deed or the title right now. I might take another couple of golf courses. I'm going to take enough property to guarantee that I have to pay the $83 million. Because if Jean Carroll wins the appeal, I have to pay as the bondsman. But I'm not going to go under. I'm not going to go upside down. I'm going to have enough property given to me by Don Trump now, unencumbered, no strings attached. I've got it. And if I have to pay the $83 million, I come out whole plus some.
Well, and therein lies the question that you have as far as why Trump would go get a bond. Because the bondsman's not going to just freeze up $83 million. The bondsman's going to freeze up maybe $120
million. Yeah.
Maybe $160
million. More than the $83 million.
Yeah, one and a half to two times the amount. And the bondsman's not going to just freeze it up without first making sure that what they're freezing, they can turn into cash.
Correct.
And so, you know, it's great. You got Mar-a-Lago here, and you say Mar-a-Lago is worth $160 million, so you want me to just take a deed of trust on Mar-a-Lago. Well, show me that Mar-a-Lago is free and clear, and before I do this, I want an appraisal on Mar-a-Lago, which could take some time to get.
It could take some time
to get. You know, and then recognizing the bondsman recognizes, well, let's say Jean Carroll wins, and I have to go in and give her $83 million.
The bondsman.
Yes, the bondsman. The bondsman says, I have to give her $83 million within a time period of weeks or months or whatever.
Plus interest.
But I'm not going to get Mar-a-Lago sold in a matter of weeks or months.
Not at all.
As a matter of fact, even if I have a complete deed signed over to me, I could see, and if I'm the bondsman, I go, there could be a potential argument from Trump that freezes my ability to get my money. And so the bondsman's got to be somebody who can advance $83 million or $90 million or whatever the judgment might be, if it takes a year to get the judgment through, can freeze up $90 or $100 million without necessarily getting his assets. Or Trump's got to come in with a $100 million bank account that he freezes and says is yours, at which point I would still be saying to the bondsman, if I'm representing the bondsman, I'd be saying, I can't guarantee you that you're just going to be able to get the check out of there.
No.
I can't guarantee you at all. Now, here's the good part. You're charging 10% bond. You're requiring $100 million. So you're going to get right up front right now $10 million. And you're going to get a bank account that's frozen. And that's one of the things that's frozen, so it can't be spent. So you're going to have a $100 million bank account protecting you. And, you know, just be ready that if they say, okay, pay the money, you can pay the money without necessarily getting the money out of the bank account, because Trump may find a way to freeze that money on you.
Right. So let's take Trump's choices. He has $5 million verdict and judgment and 83.3. He can put cash in the registry of the district court in an amount determined by the judge. Let's say it's $100 million. He can put cash in there. Nobody can get it until the appeal is over with. All right? The other thing he can do is he can post a bond, which we've been talking about. You go to a bondsman, but the bondsman's not going to guarantee $83.3 million unless the bondsman feel very comfortable and secure that he or she has the money from pledges of assets. They're going to make Don Trump pledge money and assets. Money and assets. And they're going to make sure the assets cover what they have to pay $83 million. Because once you get a bond, and if Jean Carroll wins the appeal, she gets paid. He might try to appeal it to another level. But when the appeals are exhausted and done, she gets paid from the bondsman. She walks right over there and says, give me the $83 million with interest, and they've got to give it to her. So they've got to be protected in the assets they take from Trump.
And that's Jean Carroll's best chance of getting $83 million. I would not give her many odds to get $83 million unless the judgment gets bonded.
Okay, let's talk about that, Brad. Let's say there's no bond. Now, we've been talking about what if there's a bond, how do you protect the bondsman, what Trump's options are, what Jean Carroll's options are. Let's say there was no bond, Don Trump wants to appeal, he can appeal and not post a bond. Then she has to go through collection proceedings to collect the judgment. And there's ways to do it. She can subpoena his assets. She can examine him under oath. She can bring him to the courthouse and examine him day after day about his assets. She can garnish his bank accounts. She can garnish his wages or salaries or whatever he gets paid. But it takes time, money, and it's a treasure hunt.
She can put a lien on a bunch of
assets. She can put a lien on property.
But the problem is let's say she goes and she wants to put a lien on Mar-a-Lago.
Right.
Well, is Mar-a-Lago owned free and clear? Is there a bank that has lent money based on Mar-a-Lago? Even if the Mar-a-Lago was one of many assets on a blanket mortgage, you know, a blanket mortgage being nothing more than the fact that it's being secured by a number of pieces of property, maybe Mar-a-Lago is identified in that. And so is she going to be able to get that in any part of Mar-a-Lago between now and the appellate process? Is she, what does she have that she's going to be able to get when she goes out there and starts trying to subpoena Trump's assets? You know, I jokingly think sometimes, you know, if Trump's the president, she could garnish his wages.
Garnish his wages? What's the president's wages? $200,000, $300,000?
Yeah, and I think she only gets a percentage of that because they can't leave him in poverty.
No,
they
can't leave him in poverty.
From his thing, yeah, exactly. So she could garnish maybe $40,000 a year.
But, Brad, let's go back to Mar-a-Lago. Let's give everybody an example. If there was a $100 million loan against it and she puts a lien on it to collect her judgment, then she comes after the $100 million loan, not before it.
Right.
It comes afterward.
Right. And if she tries to force the sale of Mar-a-Lago to turn it into cash, then she's going to have the cost of expenses to doing that. Now, you know, we all talk about Carol doing that. You know, from what I see, she appears to be, you know, without many assets. So she'd have to find somebody who has the financial wherewithal that wants to take that on and take that battle on and says it's worth it. And that could be one of two people. That could either be somebody who says, I see a great chance for financial gain here, or it could be somebody who says, I never liked Trump to begin with. I'm an enemy of Trump's in one form or another, and so I want to go after Mar-a-Lago just to go after it.
Right.
You know, and once again, remember, I don't know how many golf courses Trump owns now.
I don't know.
But maybe, based on property, maybe one of those golf courses alone is worth $100 million.
Maybe so. So let's break it down for everybody. So in the two trials, the $5 million trial and the $83.3 million trial, the choices are Don Trump lost so he can appeal. If he doesn't post a bond, then Jean Carroll and her attorneys can go try to collect it, garnish, take examinations under oath, examine him under oath about his, examine his CPAs under oath. But if he posts a bond, she can't do any of that. She has to wait. But it's easier because then she all she has to do, if she prevails on the appeal, is collect against the bond. And then we talked about how to protect the bondsman. So if he posts a bond and he goes up an appeal, if he wins the appeal, then he comes back for a new trial. If he doesn't win the appeal, the bond is up for grabs and it has to pay over to Jean Carroll. That's the trade-off.
And what's the problem you see with all that? You got that New York potential judgment hanging out there.
Right.
That could be as high as $370 million.
Right.
You want to hurry up and get yours ahead of theirs.
Right.
So you want to go out and start leaning property because it's kind of a race notice situation of who's going to get there first as far as getting their lien identified as being in priority list. And you got a $370 million potential judgment.
You're talking about the civil fraud judgment trial in New York.
Yeah. And what if I'm the attorney, if she comes in to me tomorrow and says, Brad, go collect this $83 million. You know, if I take on that job, which she probably would want me to take it on some kind of percentage of recovery.
Correct.
Which immediately you're going, watch out for that, because you're going, okay, now I'm not going to get paid unless I can go collect the money. And sitting here right now, I'm going, what are my chances that I could collect very much against Donald Trump in this judgment right now? But if the New York City fraud case hits in front of me and they start leaning in front of me, now I'm racing New York City as to liens on property or as to taking properties. And now I've got myself a real mess as far as trying to collect that money.
Okay, but let's further break it down for everybody. Look. If Don Trump files a bond, it's easier for Jean Carroll to collect her money because she goes against the bond. If she's trying to collect and there's no bond and she's just trying to collect on her judgment, think about this. The judgment by Jean Carroll was entered against Don Trump individually. And so what if she's starting to find, wants to find assets to pay, he didn't post a bond, she has to collect her judgment, and what if they come, the CPA comes and says he doesn't own anything individually, he owns, Mar-a-Lago is owned by Corporation XYZ, so that's not individual.
Or the family trust.
Or the family trust, so that's not individual. It's in a trust somewhere. That's what makes it so difficult. Okay?
Yeah,
because and that's what makes it hard to collect under the judgment.
If it's in the family trust, what you can do is you can get the money from the family. I mean, you can get Don Trump's interest in the family
trust.
In
the family trust.
But, you know, you're going to be sitting around with his kids and his wife and everybody else as part of the family trust determining what you're going to do with Mar-a-Lago?
Right.
You're going to come join those board meetings very easily? And even then, how do you convert that into cash? I now own 21.75% of Mar-a-Lago, which was Donald Trump's owning. I now own that, and so I want 21.75% of any revenues that Mar-a-Lago generates.
And if there aren't any, if it's upside down, you don't get anything.
Oh, what's even worse is if it's upside down, you may have to pay in.
Right.
Because you're now 21% owner of Mar-a-Lago, and if somebody looks and says, hey, that building over there needs to be redone, and it's a $3 million building, you know, you got to give me 21% of your $3 million so we can redo that building. Everybody else coming up with the money. And by the way, we have this little provision in here that says, if you don't come up with your share of the money after we make a call on you, they'd have to be legal proceedings. We make a call on you to come up with your money, then we can take that property.
Right.
We can get the property.
Right.
So all of a sudden, Donald Trump's kids or wife or somebody else owns the property again because you couldn't come up with the cash flow to do that because your $83 million has been frozen in a cash flow. So while it sounds great, the question you've got to ask is, where Jean Carroll can get her financial backing to be able to chase down this judgment.
Or the question becomes, if Don Trump filed an appeal, then he posted a bond, which is fairly liquid, you get it, and he posted a bond, the bondsman has to pay the $5 million or the $83.3 million. And she doesn't have to go through corporate structures and family trusts and collection proceedings. She gets to proceed against the bond and collect on the bond.
Well, the way things are going, I unless he gets some really good donations that he can use for this on his political run, I don't see much of a chance that he's going to put a bond up. I don't see him walking down the courthouse or going anywhere else and saying, here, I'm going to put this $83 million or $100 million here so that they can go after it. I think he's going to look, and he's going to look at his lawyers who, you know, just on this case alone, he supposedly paid the lawyer $5.6 million to defend him. Now, I think he's going to look at his lawyers and he's going to say, you do what you need to do to hold her at bay so she can't get much of the assets.
Exactly. I'm going to appeal it. I'm not going to post a bond. She's going to try to initiate collection proceedings. You just delay it and delay it and delay it and delay it.
Well, Gary, a bond's going to cost 10, 15%.
Yeah.
At a minimum. And you've got to lock up $100 million property for that person.
Or cash.
And if you're going to do that, then you're saying, I'm already going to go spend $8.5 to $12 million to get the bond. You can look and say, she's got to tag me for $8 to $12 million before I'm at a situation where if I got the verdict returned or reversed, I've lost money.
Right.
You know, so I don't see financially him deciding to do that. I don't see financially why it would make sense to do that. I don't see his ego letting him do that at all. I see him saying, you fight her every step of the way. On every action she takes with regard to trying to collect this money, good luck. You might have a judgment, but now you got to get the money from me.
Right.
I don't see any of that happening.
Okay. And I think you're right. I kind of agree with you. Let's cover one more thing, Brad. so explain to everybody so that we can cover the subject thoroughly. The $83.3 million verdict involves $65 million of punitive damages. You know, what you worry about as a plaintiff's attorney trying to collect the money is if you get punitive damages, or if you get damages, what you're worried about is the defendant, Don Trump, going to file bankruptcy. Now, there's a whole issue whether he had ever filed bankruptcy. Maybe he would file bankruptcy individually, maybe not. Maybe none of the assets are in his name individually, so he could file bankruptcy. But when you get a judgment against somebody and there's no insurance there, they can go file bankruptcy. But it's harder and almost impossible to do it in a defamation case, and you cannot discharge in bankruptcy punitive damages. So out of the $83.3 million, $65 million was punitive damages. So if he was going to go file bankruptcy and get rid of the judgment or slow it down or delay it, you can't discharge punitive damages in a bankruptcy proceeding. So that's not an option for him.
But you might, Gary, you know, if he could get a bankruptcy judge on his side, he might be able to force it into another trial.
Right.
You know, he might be able to say to the bankruptcy court, this needs to be determined as far as how much I owe through the bankruptcy trial, at which point the bankruptcy trial may say we're going to do a new trial. And you know what he's wanting is another bite at that apple to be able to try to avoid some of this judgment. And that may be where the bankruptcy court might make its own independent decision as a bankruptcy judge how much he owes, especially if you're doing a Chapter 11 reorganization.
Right.
And if he's got all his companies doing Chapter 11's reorganizations, that there may be a chance, under some very slim chances, but there may be a chance he gets that reworked.
Well, you know, Brad, and that's the last point we're going to make today, is that's a very great point, because the judge in the second trial said to Don Trump and his lawyers, you're not going to go testify or retestify against everything that was covered and decided in the first trial. Therefore, you're not going to come here on the stand and say, I didn't ever know this lady. I never met her. She just picked me out of a lineup. She picked me out of a charity fair where I shook her husband's hand. That's what he was saying. The judge said, you're not going to say that because that's already been decided in the first Jean Carroll case. So the only thing that you can talk about in the second Jean Carroll case are damages. That's all you can talk about because that judge already saw what Don Trump did to Judge Ingram in New York on this civil fraud case. He talked about everything that he wanted to talk about, whether the judge tried to restrain him or not. So in the second Jean Carroll case, Don Trump did not get to speak and say those things about Jean Carroll, those things, meaning I never touched her, I never was around her, and he did say the famous quotation, she's not even my type. He did say that, but that was in the first trial, so he got limited in the second trial, and that might be the same thing in the bankruptcy thing that you're talking about. If he has a new trial in bankruptcy, he might be limited there as well.
Well, when you read some of the things that was going on in that trial, and that Donald Trump was doing it makes your jaw drop, and you're going, you know, you've got lawyers that were charging $750 an hour,
right?
And it makes your jaw drop if the lawyers didn't advise him, please don't say those things, please don't do those things. Yeah, but Donald Trump will say what he says,
what he wants to say,
I don't know how he couldn't figure out the jury wasn't happy with him, but you know.
Well, we'll never know because all that's attorney-client privileged information, communication between an attorney and a client. You don't get into that. You can't discover it. You can't find out what it is. There's a couple of exceptions, but that's not one of them. So
he walked out in the middle of the trial.
All those things hurt, and they count in trials.
You know, a jury is not going to be very happy with that.
No.
You know, so.
Well, you and I've seen it in our careers where somebody walks out, and it's so easy to say to the jury, well, they just left. I mean, you and I had somebody, a defendant in a case, go to France.
Yeah.
In the middle of the trial. And they went to France, and we said, well, and our closing argument was, you're here, she's not here, we're here, you're here, to the jury. You can send a message across the Atlantic Ocean so fast, it'll make everybody's head spin, and they did. And that's what happens sometimes in jury trials.
Right. It just doesn't make sense. But I think that's why the attorneys charge so much. and you know, you look and you go, okay, you represented Donald Trump and you lost. That really doesn't mean much, because you knew darn good and well that in a way you were just going to be a puppet for Donald Trump. And right. You know, Donald Trump's got his strategies.
He's got his strategies.
And yep. And you know, you wonder when and if the public is going to look and say, look, you know, we don't have to go any further to say you really did it or not. We just know that you want us to give you money to pay court judgment against you sexually molesting another person and then defaming him. And you want us to pay that for you. And he takes, and we, you want us to pay your attorneys for you. And, you know, as Jean Carroll's lawyers, you can't garnish that. You can't go in and get that. As a matter of fact, I'm not even so sure that you can classify the funds that he raises to maybe help pay for this judgment, or the funds he raises to hire more attorneys and as defense lawyers. I'm not so sure that that's something that Jean Carroll can even get.
I don't think so either. I really don't.
So, you know, that at some point, the biggest danger to Donald Trump is if people start saying, we're not going to do that anymore.
Not going to give you the money. All right. You're listening to Bell and Pollock. This is Legal Anatomy of Current Events. We come to you every week. We analyze the current events in our country. Today we've been talking about Jean Carroll's and her two judgments, $5 million and $83.3 million. We hope we've given you some facts and legal analysis that you can count on, that you can rely on and use to make up your own mind as what's happening in that case. We got more shows coming up on Don Trump as well. But, Brad, we're to the part of the show where you're going to give us your American idiom of the day, which usually ends up to be more than one idiom. So what do you got for us today?
Oh, I couldn't stop.
You just couldn't stop. You couldn't help yourself.
Different idioms, you know. You know, you just look at the idioms, you know, and you look at the fact that the long arm of the law has now acted to...
The long arm of the law.
Has now acted against Donald Trump to break the bank. Because
break the bank.
Because money does not grow on trees.
My goodness gracious, you're hitting home runs over here.
Which could lead to Donald Trump cooking the books. But eventually, he's probably going to have to pick up the tab. So let's hope he saves some money for a rainy day.
You've done a great one. Where did you come up with all that?
That was not easy to come up with, but I thought these fit so perfect.
You make my quote of the day look measly. You look at my quote of the day look like nothing over here.
Well, you know, let's just put it this way. They all came naturally once you started.
You got on a roll. That was pretty good, Brad. Nice job. So my quote of the day comes from Mike Ditka. Everybody knows Mike Ditka. He used to be a football player and football coach. And the quote of the day is kind of short today, but it's powerful. Mike Ditka says, success is never permanent, and failure is never final. Success is never permanent, and failure is never final. So I wonder if the San Francisco 49ers would buy into that quote by Mike Ditka. All right, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We're so glad to have you here on this podcast, Legal Anatomy of Current Events, and we will see you next week.